Welcome to The Hollywood Outsider, an award-winning weekly entertainment podcast. In this episode, we will be discussing the most ambitious movie of the year and currently the most expensive movie ever made, Avatar: The Way of Water. Let's get on with the show. My name is Aaron Peterson. Joining me today is my fellow host, Troy Heinrichs.
Hey, everybody. I didn't drown as I was holding my pee for 3 hours and 10 minutes.
You made it the whole time, huh? You didn't leave once?
The whole time, didn't leave once. Not even the transition move that they said was the spot to go pee in.
Oh, I love that people complain about that. I'm like, really? Tell me you haven't watched a series at home and watched like 8 hours in one day. Come on. It's not that bad. Just go to the bathroom if you need to go.
You can go. You just get up and pause it. It's a lot different when you paid $15 to $18 for Lee Prime.
Pee faster. 3D. Go.
Not the experience.
Get up there. Pee faster. All right. Well, just us two are here for this particular episode, which is our last episode of the year. As the other duo haven't been able to catch it, one is nowhere near a theater and the other one is unavailable because of work issues.
Still sleeping, probably.
Yeah, probably still sleeping, but I'm trying to make it sound good. Working, quote unquote, right? Again, this will be the last episode of the year. We'll be back after the first for the new episode, unless you're a Patreon supporter, where we will have two new podcasts dropping in the next week or so, our bonus episode and a brand new bad movie night, where we look at a movie critics or fans didn't seem to like, but we think is not, in fact, a bad movie. And this month is Big Daddy, Adam Sandler's gem. You always can sign up at patreon.com/thehollywoodoutsider. It's patreon.com/thehollywoodoutsider. If you want to sample bad movie night, we have a public feed where past episodes, though unlike on Patreon, they have been edited, but past episodes are available there as The Hollywood Outsider Presents Bad Movie Night. There we go. That's all the sales pitch for this episode. Done, done, done. Now, we're going to talk about Avatar, The Way of Water. And of course, James Cameron can't make a movie without making sure that it's the most expensive movie that's ever been made. It's just his thing. It's his shtick. We're going to do this a little weird. We're going to discuss this movie spoiler free for a little bit until later on when we get into some of the finer details, but a lot of this plot is pretty simple, wouldn't you say?
Most expensive movie in the world. It's the most basic story you can come up with.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like it's just I don't know, James Cameron probably just pulled up a script he had written 10 years ago and just said, all right, just make it blue.
Yeah, lots and lots of blue.
Lots of blue. Okay, so here we go. The Way of Water, just so you know what it is about, which is weird if you're listening to this and you have no idea. I mean, I assume you saw the first one, but it's set more than a decade after the events of the first film. Avatar: The Way of Water begins to tell the story of the Sully family, Jake, Neytiri, and their kids. Yeah, they've got kids now. And the trouble that follows them, the lengths they go to keep each other safe, the battles they fight to stay alive, and the tragedies they endure. Like Jake says throughout the film, a father's job is to protect his family. That's what the whole movie is basically about. Do you agree with that sentiment?
Yeah, and most of that takes place after they kick the sky people to the curb and send them back to Earth. So they're literally growing up pretty much, you know, sky people free for the majority of the birth through, I would say, teen, maybe late teen years of the children.
It's a good 10 to 13 years or so, right? Would you say? Roughly.
Yeah, okay. Sky people are not to be found. There are a couple that stay back, and I'm sure you can probably figure out who those are if you've seen the first film. All the good people stay behind.
That's right. All the good people. Well, and one random kid. So Jake Sully and Neytiri have formed a family. Natayam is their first son and oldest child. Loak is their second son. And Tuck, their daughter and youngest child, plus adopted kids Kiri and a human child that was left behind by the sky people. That's named Spider. And they're doing everything they can to stay together. However, they must leave their home in the forest and explore the regions of Pandora because Colonel Quaritch returns as part of the recombinant program as a Navi. Navi? Navi. As a Navi.
As a Navi. Yes.
Thankfully, these are not real cultures, so I can screw the name up and I'm okay.
And in this case, it's not even Quaritch. It's Quaritch's clone.
Right.
Because we all know that Quaritch died in the first movie. So apparently anybody can live forever in Pandora.
If they did the upload beforehand. Had to an upload. So the family becomes hunted and retreat to the Metcayena Reef clan at Pandora's eastern seaboard, where they are given shelter, even though some of the tribesmen consider them to have demon blood for their genetic human heritage. Shame. The family learns the ways of the Reef people. Kiri, who is adopted and a direct descendant of Sigourney Weaver's Grace from the first movie, develops a bit of a spiritual bond with the sea and its creatures, and Loak befriends Lysiria, the daughter of clan chief Tanawari and his wife, Ronal, who's played by Kate Winslet.
Basically, what Aaron's saying is that if you can get a closed caption device when you go see this movie, you would probably benefit from it because there's a lot of names and a lot of places that are very hard to pronounce.
Oh, my God. And it was hard remembering who was who for a while. I mean, they're all so blue.
Yeah, there are a couple that are turquoise.
The sea people are turquoise. Apparently, they say, hey, guys, we got to get a different shade of blue. We can't have everybody blue. All right, we'll make them turquoise. Okay, they're different. Got it.
Yeah.
I mean, it's very much representative of cultures of Earth, and it's just on a different planet. That's the way that they're presenting it. And, of course, Earth is dying. Now, I want to talk about the setup, first of all. It's been over a decade, and I want to know how you feel about the story this time around, especially because if you really think about it, the entire movie is about how much they want Jake Sully. And it seems very obvious they don't care if he's dead or alive for a great portion of it. So why? Just because he's the reason the Sky People had to leave to begin with? It feels like this is not a great mission to me.
Yeah, I think it's a matter of the Sky People come back. And when the Sky People come back, it's, you know, they're, like we said, they're about 13, 14 years old. Some of the kids are. And then it like time jumps 1 year. And in that 1 year, Scully and his family and the blue people of the forest are basically harassing the humans. And so through that year, they finally have come to the point of saying, hey, you know, we can't make progress on Pandora to settle Pandora because Earth is dying. And that's the new mission. They're not there to farm whatever it was. Obstinate.
Unobtainium. Unobtainium was the first movie. Yeah.
I knew it was an ob thing. Yeah, they're not there for mining anymore. They're there for colonization. And they can't colonize and, you know, progress with Sully always taking people out. And so they need to put him down like the dog he is.
Yeah, which is funny because they're not trying to take out all of the Na'vi. They're trying to take out, really, Jake Sully and his family.
And his crazy-ass wife, yeah.
I said his family, yeah, specifically. She's not crazy. She's a mother who's just, you know, pissed.
But that's what the general kept saying.
Well, yeah, that's what he kept saying, but he's also kind of a dick. Now, first off, there's a couple returning characters. I kind of want to get your vibe on this, right? And these are ones you've seen them in interviews. And if you haven't, well, they're out there. You've got Sigourney Weaver returning, but she's returning as the young offspring from her mother, Grace, who is still apparently just being, comatose somewhere. And Quaritch is back because he was part of the Recomb program, which was where he uploaded all his memories so that should he die in battle, they could bring him back as a Na'vi. How do you feel about that in terms of bringing back characters that we thought were pretty much dead?
Well, I think Sigourney Weaver coming back works because, you know, the whole, you know, Pandora and Awa remember all of the memories that have gone before. And she did die as a Na'vi in that movie. And the first time around, so like her memories would have been uploaded to the planet. So seeing Grace as Grace, I think is spot on, and that makes perfect sense. I think having Sigourney Weaver's voice be the voice of Grace's child, I think that was a little threw me off a bit at first, because you're like, well, is it Grace or is it not Grace? Because it should have had a different voice, I think, for the daughter character.
Yeah, and the cadence wasn't much different. I mean, she tried a little bit to definitely tweak it so it sounded younger, and it did for the most part, but on the same token, you hear Sigourney Weaver whenever she talks.
Oh, yeah, there's times when you're just like, wait, I didn't think Sigourney Weaver was voicing that character, and then you're like, oh, no, she's totally voicing that character. Mm-hmm. So, and then Noah's also back, as well as the other doctor that was helping him. You know, they don't play into this that much. You don't see him. You know, they're in the early goings, I think, of the movie, and then you don't really see him pop up again later on.
Just one spot.
So I think it's fine. I think going back to Colonel Quaritch is an easy play. I don't think that's very inventive and creative for having whatever it was, 14 years to come up with a script and put this thing together. So that part, I think, and then, of course, what happens and how he plays into the story specifically, I think, is also kind of like, okay, now we're just trying to grasp at straws here to like make a story happen. I wasn't a big fan of the Colonel Quaritch move. I would have just been as happy as the new general that was there to colonize the planet being the one that they had to fight against.
Yeah, E.D. Falco is General Ardmore. I think that would have been a much better sell. But I mean, I get it. Stephen Lang is a great actor. He plays a badass so well. I mean, I have no problems or qualms with him. It's just bringing him back after the way that he died. And I do like that they actually acknowledge it in the movie. So even though this is a replica of him, he has his memories and whatnot. So when he sees his own body, that's very impactful for him. And, you know, he knows that's the person that killed me. Okay. Got it. Don't like them, you know, but then it ends up feeling a bit too personal when he's really just a replica. He's not really the guy. So it's interesting, but we'll talk more about that as we go, because there's some spoilery stuff. I really, really want to talk about that. In terms of the overall story, to me, it felt like, rather than it being a sequel, it felt more like a reestablishing of the world and setting up, you know, all the 47 other Avatar movies that James Cameron's working on. Because this felt like a setup for what's to come, not so much a middle chapter of what already came before it.
Yeah, it was definitely if you didn't know there was an Avatar 3, 4, 5, 600 that might be coming down the line, this felt very, I hate to say retread, but a lot of that first hour is retread. Mm-hmm. Like it's the same beats, it's the same mechanisms, it's the, oh, we're gonna, here's the one character where the AWA seeds are gonna fall on, and here's this thing where they're gonna touch the, you know, their tails, this other thing, and how do we capture our animals? And it's just kind of reminding people of what happened 14 years ago and just the beauty of the planet itself, which there's nothing wrong with that at the same time, because it has been 14 years, but it's also 1 hour of a 3 hour movie. And it's like, dude, it could have been 2 hours. Just tell people to go watch the other movie first.
13 years. It came out in 2009. So 13
years. Yeah. Close enough.
Yeah. It's pretty close. You know, and he's already shot Avatar 3. Apparently there's a rumor he's got 9 hours of footage that he wants to adapt the effects for and then cut it down from there, which would not surprise me in any way, shape, or form. The story was interesting because it's kind of, well, it's broken up into acts, like three distinctive acts, where it's like set up, establishing a new world, and then, you know, an end game. And,
yeah, and I would say it's even like two acts, an interlude that flashes back to the first act, and then the final act, which is actually where the movie actually starts.
Yeah, it feels like it. Yeah, to a degree. So we'll talk about the details here in a minute, but did the length ever bother you? It's 3 hours long. A lot of people don't want to wait that long to pee, man. Some people are like looking at that big gulp cup and just wondering if they can make the straw work. So what about you?
That's the thing. I went in immediately going like, I'm not buying a drink. I'm not buying snacks. I brought maybe just couple M&Ms in my pocket to, like, you know, nourish me.
Snuck in a couple M&Ms? What the hell is that?
they were like the fun size packets from Halloween. So like, I had like
the guy's rattling in front of you. He's like, what? What's that about? Nothing. Nothing.
But I didn't have a beverage, so obviously the length bothered the concession stand, I think, because I didn't get concessions, so they lost money on the concessions, at least for me anyway. But there's parts of this where you're just like, man, it's really beautiful, but I don't really need to see 30 minutes of swimming in the ocean.
Yeah.
I thought I was watching Dune again. Like, I don't really need to see 30 minutes of desert blowing in the ground. There's definitely some parts of this that could have been drastically cut down to get it to a solid 2.5. Here's 220.
Here's what I would say to that. Number one, you're nuts. This is way better than Dune.
For sure.
I didn't like Dune at all. But it, at least it was one of those things. It was kind of like watching a nature special, right? If you're watching a nature special on YouTube or wherever, and it's shot beautifully, it's hard to turn away when you're in it, because it just feels like, oh, it's such a fantastic world, and I'm really interested in what lives here. And they do show a lot of that. It's almost like a Pixar movie. Very, very little live action here. It's mostly CGI, and it's visually stunning. I was never bored. But I do wonder if I go back and rewatch it, that's not going to be as enthralling as it was the first time. So is it going to be as interesting, those long periods? Because the middle chapter is very long. Like, it's a good hour of swimming. And
oh, yeah.
I don't know. I think they could have cut a good half hour out of it, like you said. I think it probably should have.
Yeah, I'd say this is, what was the Disney special, Welcome to Earth, with Will Smith? This is definitely Welcome to Pandora. And then there's maybe 45 minutes of Avatar in it.
Yeah. Interesting how he chose to do that. But it's also James Cameron. I never really felt bored. I felt interested the whole time. And I liked getting to know the characters. And I thought it was important that we started to care about the family more and establish them. And I think it's definitely going to come into play for the next movie, where I feel like the kids are going to keep being a more integral part to the story. I think that's just going to happen. Has to happen.
Yeah, I mean, if there's Avatar 3 and Avatar 4, if that's the plan,
if.
Then Avatar...
it's going to happen.
I don't know if there's like a 5, 6, 7 or whatever. It's also coming down the line. But if it's a 3 and a 4, 3 better be the death of the parents so that the fourth movie is about the kids.
Yeah.
Otherwise, introducing the kids in this movie just kind of seems like, okay, we just needed extra characters to get a bigger budget.
Speaking of budget, unlike many visual effects heavy pieces, these performances really came through, I felt like. You could see the anguish and joy on the characters' faces. I felt every element of what they were going through, which is really hard to do when it's motion capture. Not many movies have done it as well as I think this movie does it. And this probably does it better than anything I've ever seen. Did you feel the same? And if so, did the performances, any of them stick out in particular for you?
Yeah, I think I was wiping spit off my glasses from all that hissing that was going on because that hissing felt very real.
It really did. Yeah, it really did.
There was a lot of lens techniques, depending on which animals are looking at the humans or the Pandorans and the Pandorans looking at the animals. I thought that was a really clever use of the visualness to describe how people see the world in that regard. I really liked the adopted child, Kiri. That CGI performance was actually really, really well. And you just fell into Pandora with her and experiencing Awa, and you just get the emotional impact of the planet through Kiri's performance. Sully, Jake, I didn't find him as charismatic as the first movie. I don't know if it was the dreads or the long hair or just something about it just didn't seem like he was this one he felt like a Marine.
Yeah.
He felt like a grunt versus the first one. He felt like he made the transition from grunt to Navi. And here he just felt like he was just a grunt, not even a husband.
But don't you think he was kind of going back to his own personal past where he was trained as a Marine to get his family in protect mode? Because they start the movie, it's very much like he's like that. But once they're starting to be attacked, that's when he starts getting very, very serious about, military action. And he's basically organizing his family as a military. So I think that has something to do with it, is because of the story elements at play.
It could be. He just wasn't as captivating as the first movie.
Sure, I could see that.
Where Thierry, on the other hand, like that was just the mother scorn, like, total beast mode, like in the final act. Like, she was so good, like you felt every bit of pain that was going through her body, and then all the love that was going through her body at the beginning of the movie when she's having her children.
She was my favorite performance, I think,
easily. Yeah. Hands down.
Yeah, my favorite performance for sure. And also second, Payakin, that space whale, you know.
Oh yeah.
They conveyed so much by just eyes and whale sounds, and I thought that was just really captivating. Like, I was absolutely enraptured with that whole relationship. Like, oh, that dude just befriended a whale. It's like getting a puppy.
Yeah. It was like when you all fell in love with Crush from Finding Nemo, but in the game this time, it's a whale.
Yep.
Very, very similar feels.
And the effects across the board. There was, you know, unlike so many special effects heavy movies these days, I mean, Marvel, I can find things wrong with that, and DC movies and all that stuff. And, you know, anything blockbustery, there's usually something where you're like, well, that takes me out of it. I saw nothing that took me out of this movie, not one time, not once.
I don't know if it was where I was sitting in the theater and the angle of my glasses for the 3D experience. There were a couple where you were like, okay, that looks like a video game.
Well, it looked like a video game, but a real video game. Like, it was real.
Yeah, like PlayStation 6.
Yeah, it's next gen. Next gen. Yeah.
Yeah, but there were definitely some spots where you're like, okay, that's a real background and that's a computer generated blue person standing on the real generated background.
Any of the other performances really stand out to you? I mean, Jermaine Clement shows up as a scientist. He's usually a comedian. You know him from, you know, What We Do in the Shadows, the movie, and several other movies. He's done a lot. He's usually the comic relief. Here, he's very, very scientific and studious. Edie Falco's in it from Sopranos. It's a great cast.
Yeah, I love the, you know, his, you know, kind of back and forth with Brendan Cowell. You know, you have the, it's very much the, I'm the, you know, Moby Dick, Captain Ahab, commander of the ship that I'm going to kill and harpoon my stuff. And the other guy's like, yeah, you go do that. I'm just the marine biologist. They have a really good back and forth between the two of them, especially as the final act plays out.
Absolutely. Okay, so we're going to come back to the visual effects because this movie is entirely CGI, or at least I would say 80%, 85%, somewhere in there.
Yeah, it's up there.
How do you feel about that? Because, I mean, essentially, it's almost a, I don't want to say cartoon, but it's computer animation. Are you okay with this? Does it bother you at all? Or did you love it? You know, where do you land? Do you wish there was more live action intercut with it?
There was, it's really well done that it feels more live action than computer generated in a lot of places. And I think that helps just being in the ocean and having like the real backgrounds from that perspective. I just, it just added enough that it didn't make it feel like, you know, episode 3 Phantom Menace, where it's very clearly where the CGI sticks out.
Right.
To this day.
Yeah. What I really, really enjoyed was, you know, I liked Aquaman. I was a big fan of Aquaman, that whole underwater world, and it felt very fantastical. And when you're down in it, it's just ridiculous, and but still just amazing to behold. But I never thought that's a real world. You know, I just thought, well, that's a really cool imaginative world. This always felt grounded. I mean, it's in space and whatnot, and there's creatures and different kinds of marine in life. But in the same token, I just was completely enamored with everything that was happening. I always felt like this could be a real world. Like I felt like I'm in the real sea. I'm underwater and I'm really going with these guys as they travel underwater and have adventures on top of the sea and under the sea. It just really, really blew me away how well they crafted this world.
Yeah, until you get to the Hallelujah Mountains and then you're like, oh yeah, that's right. Floating rocks. That doesn't really work.
Yeah, those definitely look like a video game. Always, they did in the first one too. So not a big step there. I will say I just rewatched the first one. That movie really holds up.
It's actually a lot better than I remembered it being.
Same.
I watched it too, like 2 days ago, and I was like, yeah, I can see where the axe broke down now, and it's like it's actually really, really decent. I think the challenge was like when the movie came out in the theater, it was amazing, and then you watched it at home and you were like, man, this looks like crap at home because we didn't have 4K TVs.
Sure.
Now that it's 4K TV, the experience is about what it was in the theater, which makes it a lot better.
That's a good point. That's a very good point. I like it. Okay, so we're going to get ready to hit spoilers, but before we do, if $10 is the full price of admission, what's your score for Avatar The Way of Water?
10 for the beauty, 5 for the story. So we'll give it a solid 650.
I am at 650 as well. The story is kind of lame, but everything else is pretty good. So let's talk about spoilers. If you haven't seen it, I would stop here and have a wonderful holiday, and we'll see you on the flip side of 2023. But if you have seen it, we're going to continue. Jake's plan to hide and Neytiri's reluctance. Was this ever a good plan? Because it cost them, cost them their son anyway.
Well, I mean, in the first movie, the goal was obviously relocate the people because they're coming, they're going to take your home and kill you anyway. Sure. So in the first movie, the plan was to run and they decided to fight. And by fighting, you know, a lot of people lost their lives. So I can understand the plan to be like, let's get out of here and go somewhere else. So yeah, I think the plan was solid. I think it was a good move to one, explore more of Pandora and understand other tribes, and because they're going to need help, you know, if the sky people are back, they can't just keep doing it on their own because eventually you're going to run out of woods tribe people. So yeah, I think the plan was fine. Neytiri running is just Neytiri because Neytiri is very much this is my home. This is where our ancestors are put to rest. This is where the memories are, you know, so she's just sticking with her culture and there's nothing wrong with that. But I think if survival is the key to protect your family, then you do what you have to do, which is hide your family.
Yeah. See, this is where I have kind of a big problem with the whole story as a whole, and why I say the story is just not good. I mean, I'd give the story like a 4 If that, I just think it's very, very generic. And there's a lot of plot holes. Like, a lot.
There's a lot of plot that was introduced that was completely dropped also. Which,
sure. I don't
know, that was intentional for the future movies, but you introduce it in this movie, you better freaking pay it off. And there's a lot of stuff that didn't pay off.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. But in terms of the plan, I mean, I have a problem with the whole basis for Quaritch's plan here. Is I got to get Jake Sully. I got to get him. Got to kill him. Got to get him. Got to, you know, why? There are still people in the mountains. Get them too. Like, why wouldn't you go after all of them? They're all fighting you. It's not just this family that's doing the damage, but they are, he's so self focused on that. And I'm sure you could probably make the argument that, well, it's because it's personal and he has those memories of being murdered by him and whatnot. But on the same token, he's under orders and he seems like he's following orders pretty well. And nobody's saying, hey, don't worry about him. He took off. We don't need to worry about him anymore. Let's just focus on the plan at hand. Instead, the whole movie is he's so focused on killing Jake, even though Jake hasn't been a factor in a long time, you know?
Yeah, because when he leaves, he leaves. So he's nowhere near the Sky People and what they're trying to do to colonize that part of Pandora. It's like, just let him have the continent.
Yeah. What's the problem? Like, what do you think he's doing? He's just, you know, getting a bunch more troops to come back? Or what are you thinking that this is so dire? And but you don't have any concern about any other clan or a clan leader or anything else, just this guy. That just feels like, well, now it's too personal and it doesn't make sense for a guy leading the military.
Right.
So that's the part of the story that bugged me. Neytiri, I'm with you. I mean, like you said, whether it's the motion capture or Zoe Saldana's performance, she was my favorite character to watch because, man, when she got pissed, she was fierce. The whole end battle where, you know, where her son dies and she's in loco mode because that's what a parent would be like. I freaking love that. I mean, she's willing to kill Spider. It seemed like to me.
Oh, sure.
I had no, I mean, when sure. She cut his throat, right? She nipped his throat.
Nicked the throat, but slashed him twice across the chest, I believe it was.
Yeah. And I mean, I truly felt she would have killed him to save her kid.
Yeah. Son for a son.
Yeah. It's bold, man. I love her performance. All right, so the kids become they're a big factor in this movie. A big factor. Who stood out for you? You kind of talked about Kiri. Is that really your number one that stood out? Were you ever frustrated with Loak's choices throughout the movie because the kid kept doing everything he was not supposed to do?
I mean, Loak reminds me of, oh my gosh, what's his name from House of the Dragon, right? The younger Targaryen blonde-haired kid that basically keeps screwing up,
mm-hmm.
and then doesn't quite get it. Like, I feel like that's that same, like, he's going to rise to be a leader because he makes these dumb decisions because he has to learn from his mistakes in order to excel as a Na'vi in the future. So I liked his calmness and resolve as it relates to his fishy friends, right?
When he's, his, you know, fishy friends.
You know, the fact that he's like, I'm an outcast too, just like you are, you know, and that they make that bond. I think that just, it really spoke to that character and it makes you really connect with the character, just like you're connecting with Kiri as she's, you know, connecting to Ewa and like just exploring all the sea creatures and bugs and flowers and reefs and coral. And yeah, it just, you're experiencing the character through the other things that they're interacting with.
Right. I really felt like his older brother didn't have much of a presence at all.
And no, he was the quintessential like firstborn son, you know, oh, I'll go find him. I'll go take care of him. Yes, dad. Yes, sir. Blah, blah, blah. It's like very, very wallpaper.
Yeah. And Loak was more like his dad. Just,
for sure.
I'm going to rebel. I'm going to do what's right. And that's just what it's going to be. But at the end of the movie, like the last act, it's kind of like it's his fault his brother dies. I mean, when his dad says, you've already done enough, he's not wrong. If you wouldn't have went after the whale, they wouldn't have had you guys. There wouldn't have been all this battle. There wouldn't have been all this blood spilled. You know, sometimes shut up and listen, kid. Damn. But in the same token, I mean, I get it. It's his buddy. The whale's his buddy.
Yeah. And if no one's going to look out for the whale, then how is anybody going to look out for him?
Yeah.
But that's what he's thinking.
Thankfully, Whale came back and kicked some ass. That was a great,
oh my God.
Was a great best scene.
Character of the movie. that whole sequence when he, like, the thing just jumps out of the water and lands on top of the ship, and he's like flicking fins and tails and just knocking shit all over the place. I'm like, that was awesome.
That was awesome. And then dinging rockets off his head and finding a way to just destroy that boat with their own,
with the tow. Yeah. He's doing his best cable. Emperor Strikes Back tow cable impression.
Really was. Yeah.
So good.
It was. Oh, that was so funny. So, okay. Now
imagine a giant whale jumping over a boat over and over again to tie the rope cable around the boat. It's just, it's ridiculous when you say it out loud, but it was so awesome.
It was so good. Yeah, it was so good. That's why I say, like, even though I say the story sucked, the movie's good. Like, I enjoy the movie. I will enjoy watching it again. I just feel like it should have been tighter and whatnot, but the story, that's pretty impressive when you can overcome a really kind of generic story. But there is good humanity in here, or Navi Danity, whatever it is. But there's a lot of emotion coming from the characters, and you really start to bond with them by the end. So that's helpful for the next movie coming forward.
Yeah, I mean, there's a quintessential feeling you get as the movie goes along that Pandora is alive, and you really, I mean, I never thought in my wildest dreams that I would ever cry for a plant. But when Home Tree falls in the first movie, you feel the pain that they all feel, like they lost their ancestors, they lost their purpose, they lost their place, and the planet is now injured because of this. Mm-hmm. You get that same kind of feeling in here when, you know, there's just ruthless killing of the sea life for no reason at all. And it's just like, man, when the one other whale, the Tanukin, like what's their name? I always forget.
Tolkien.
Tolkien. Yeah. It's like Tolkien, but like Tolkien, like an ooh sound, it's, I guess.
T-U-L-K-U-N. Tolkien.
Yeah. They migrate. And so they've like commune with the sea tribe, and they basically have like pairs. So like the one daughter of the tribe is paired with this one particular Tolkien, and that Tolkien's the one that actually ends up dying, and she's like just had a calf, and like it's just so heartbreaking to see happen. So heartbreaking.
Especially because you know the parallels, right, to what we do as people. And
correct,
that's what we do. We will kill them and then not use huge portions of the meat. So you're not really doing it so much for survival. You're doing it for riches. And that's just,
and then when you find out what those riches are and how much of the animal gets wasted, you know, because of what they're just trying to get, it's like, man, like, we're just awful people.
And the way I understood it, that was anti-aging gel, basically, right?
Yeah, basically it was the fountain of youth.
Yeah,
that is what they were searching for, was kill the Tolkien, suck out the brain juice, because the brain juice would basically make humans never age again.
That's horrible. That's impressive to me, like you were talking about, that I had an emotional response to something that was entirely CGI. Like, there was nothing there that was real. And it was horrifying. Absolutely horrifying. Because we're all suckers for an animal getting hurt like that, you know? Oh, poor thing. Poor thing. Now, Quaritch and Spider. Okay, so Quaritch is basically a one-note villain for, I would say, three-quarters of this movie. And then at the end, the last quarter, he really seems to actually have a fondness for Spider, who is, in fact, his the real Quaritch's son, and apparently got left behind. Did you buy this relationship? And how about his choice to save him at the end, where everybody in the theater was like, are you freaking out of your mind, kid?
Yeah, I bought it more in the front half of the film when he's teaching him the ways of the Na'vi, and like you could see like they're trying to bond, and then when you realize, oh no, he was just using you to understand the Na'vi and then basically threw you aside and kept you as a prisoner for then the middle part of the movie, it's like, why would you go back and save his life? Like, that was dumb. Mm-hmm. So dumb. But gotta have a bad guy for the third movie coming up.
You do, and it pisses me off though, because that's lame. That is lame. And that's where, you know, James Cameron loves to make fun of freaking superhero movies. He's done it recently, and not to the extent that Scorsese does, but I'm like, this is no different, man. You can't let a villain die so you can bring back a better one. Like, he's not our Darth Vader. I don't think he's powerful enough of a character to consume three movies. I just don't. I think he's a good foe here. You got two versions of the same foe in two movies. Let it go. Pulling him out of that sea and letting him live. Now, I will say I did like the choice where the kid was just being human, essentially, and he had some kind of kinship with him because he has seen the Na'vi as his people anyway, and then this is also murmurs of his actual father. I mean, I get the conflict. He's a kid. I'm not blaming the kid. And he does go back to his real family. It's just, I feel like that's a non-committal on Cameron's part, on James Cameron's part. Like, why keep this guy alive for yet another mustache twirling battle? Unless you're, maybe in the next movie, he will grow. Now, if that happens, okay. Now I'm interested because then you have three different characters. You have a guy who, because of the relationship with Spider, the next movie and the third movie, he grows and actually doesn't want to have this war with the Na'vi anymore.
Yeah, like I think that's exactly what you'd have to do with Cordich's character in the third movie, is have him be the one that's being attacked and has to rely on Jake to help him out. And then they make amends for the real threat that comes in the fourth movie.
Do you like Cordich's character, or are you tired of it and wish we could just move on?
The problem I had with Cordich's character in this movie...
Cordich. You keep saying Cordich. Cordich.
Cordich. The problem I had with the character in this movie is that it was, like we said, it's the duplication of the first movie. It's the, we downloaded a bunch of humans into blue robots that have to go now learn how to be Na'vi. Even the whole claiming your Banshee ceremony was the exact same spot in the exact same way. It was just like, why are you telling me the first movie? I just watched it last night.
They're not robots. So, they're actual Na'vi.
I know. I'm just
saying. Yeah, I know. You're just making it simple. They're Westworld. That's what it is. They uploaded their consciousness into their beings.
Yeah. It's like Alter Carbon. Just, you know, instead of using the disc, they use, you know, pretty tenderloins or something. Tendrils. That's what I was looking for. Tendrils. So I think Cordich is... character suffers because the first half of the movie for his character is literally watching Jake from the first movie all over again.
I don't get it. I mean, I guess you want to have that where the bad guy can learn, but we need a different villain. If he was as strong as Darth Vader, okay. If he was as strong as, I don't know, Thanos or something like that, okay. But he's not. He's just, I love Stephen Lang. I really do. I've loved him for Band of the Hand. That's the first time I ever saw that guy in anything, and he's great in that. He's a great actor. I just don't think that character warrants continuing to be the villain.
Especially when he died in the first movie.
Yes, exactly. Because I was glad that he died. I'm like, all right, they won. Oh, they didn't really win. Well, he's back again. Oh, he died. No, he didn't really die again. You did this trick. You already did it.
Yeah. Ugh. Fool me once, shame on me. Fool me twice, shame on you.
And I will tell you as I was watching that Avatar and Jake kills him or thinks he kills him and he's floating away, I said, snap his neck or he's not dead. Snap his neck or he's not dead. And sure enough, wasn't dead. Just, damn it, irritates me when it's that predictable.
Yep.
Again, you know, the relationship between Loak and Paikin, I'm sure I said that six times wrong from Sunday and I don't care. But love that relationship. That's my favorite relationship in the movie. But also a big shout out to Neytiri and, you know, her whole relationship with her children, because Jake feels, like you said, like a combat veteran the whole movie, less like a dad, where mom feels like a mom. Hey, she's just fierce and protective and feral, and she does not want anything to happen to her babies.
Can we just, you know, say it right now that Paikin deserves, you know, best actor or actress? I don't know, what is Paikin? Was it a boy or a girl?
I don't know. Best marine thing?
Yeah.
Best aquatic life?
Best aquatic, yeah.
Just a beautiful relationship, but I mean...
Yeah, you wanted to see Paikin more. It was like, when is Paikin coming back?
Exactly.
Like, it was that activating.
It was good, and I did like how the kids' relationships changed. You know, you had the bullies who kind of grew, and you know, you had Loak actually understanding where the other ones were coming from. That was, I appreciated that because, you know, it's interesting. I really did appreciate that you had the fierceness of warriors in terms of Ronal? Is that how you say it? Kate Winslet's character? She's pregnant and she still goes into battle, just like, you know, in the past where, you know, women warriors had to do that because they were protecting their home. And she's like, no, I'll fight. Baby or not, I'm fighting.
Yeah, I thought she was really great and captivating on the screen. Just wish she had more screen time, so hopefully she's a bigger character in the next one.
I figure she's got to be. She's got to be. And now that they are part of the Reef people, you know, that's their clan now. They're no longer part of the Forest people. I got to imagine that the next movie will also take place in, you know, a water environment. But is there something else you want to see? Do you want to see like sand, like the Dune of Avatar? Do you want to go there next time?
Never want to see the sand people. Never. But you know, a volcano rising up out of the earth and having fire people, like that'd be interesting.
Ooh, there you go. There we go.
What I would like is for it to not be about the sky people. Like have them like deal more with the planet, like commune with the animals or have a fight with the animals or something is happening to the planet and they need to save the planet, something of that nature, versus like, oh, it's the stupid humans fighting aliens. Like we don't need to see that story anymore.
I feel like you could have that as just a subplot at this point and have it be a clan fight. You know, you're going against another group of people for some reason.
Which you thought this was kind of going to be that way. Like, sure. We don't want your war here, and now we're going to fight you to keep you away from the Reef because we don't want the sky people coming here, and they're coming here because of you.
Right.
And then that never comes to happen.
Speaking of, this is a movie that kind of revolves around industrial excesses and exploitation for money, yet it's also the most expensive movie ever made at $460 million. Does one contradict the other, like, or is it just James Cameron's way of...
Not at all.
Okay.
No. Yes, absolutely. It's like a freaking joke. Like, hey, we're here because we're going to like mine this place to death and we're going to steal all the Fountain of Youth serum and whatever. And oh, and by the way, like, let's blow, you know, $500 million.
It's wild. I'm like, I don't think you're learning the lessons you're trying to teach, but, you know, whatever.
I mean, yes, China is going to eat this thing up, so I'm sure it'll recoup its money. But I don't know if the word of mouth is going to transcend from week to week. I know that the take for the weekend is a little bit lower, and that's because most people are opting to see the higher price formats, right? IMAX, you know, 4X, big screen, Dolby Prime, all that fun stuff, 3D. So there's not that many theaters that carry that concept. So you might see, you know, week two and week three actually hold a little bit better in the box office because of those people waiting to see it in those formats.
And the holidays too. Yep.
Yeah, and the holidays. So it'll be interesting to see how it plays out. But man, I, like, I'm coming out of it and I'm like, I wasn't super hyped to tell people to go see it. I was kind of like, oh, it was good.
I mean, I want to tell people, this is one of those movies where I think you have to see it in a theater. I really do to get the full advantage. Now, I know some people are like, I got a 75-inch at home, I'll watch it. And that's not going to do a movie like this justice. It's just not. I
saw the 3D version of Dolby Prime and I thought the 3D were cool, super wasn't needed. You know, the first movie, it definitely felt like the 3D was necessary. So you felt like you were in Pandora. I could have done without the 3D in this one, to be honest.
Well, to be perfectly honest, I can usually do without the 3D, but this was much more immersive than the first one. The first one felt more like, this is 3D. And this one felt like you're in the world. You're gliding through it. And I like that.
Yeah, the shark attack, you probably needed the 3D. That was cool.
Oh, God, that was so good. That was intense. I was jumping in my seat.
Prehistoric shark attack, whatever you want to call the shark thing.
Well, there's definitely nods to Jaws throughout this movie. Throughout this movie. I was counting on my hand. I had like 7 at one point. I'm like, well, at least Cameron appreciates Jaws.
Yeah, where he's coming up, when the shark's coming up and he's just sitting there floating on the water. And I'm like, oh, that could just be a surfboard instead of a flying water dragon.
Exactly. And he's got, you know, he has the whale uses the cables against him to guide the boat and rip the boat apart. There's the floaties. You know, there's all kinds of nods to Jaws in here, which I mean, I feel like if you're going to do a movie on water, you have to. There was moments, especially at the end, tell me if you had this, where you're watching it going, oh my God, I'm getting Titanic flashbacks. Like when they're trying to escape the ship and they're getting trapped underneath and all that, that's felt so Titanic to me.
And this is why I think this movie suffers a little bit. Like I didn't see any ounce of originality in this movie. You know, it was like the whole like switch people around and memories. I'm like, okay, that's Total Recall. And then it's like, then you have the, you know, Fountain of Youth story and you have the Captain Ahab. And then you got, like you said, Jaws is in here and you got Titanic is in here. And it's like at one point, they were in the furnace room and there was like a whole bunch of chains and stuff. And he's hanging from the chains when he's fighting Quaritch towards the end. I'm like, oh, this is the end of Terminator 2. Like who's going to fall in the vat of lava.
Yep. It's true. I had that throughout. I had those feelings throughout the movie. It was really, kind of interesting how much it wasn't original, but visually everything was beautifully stunning and original there. It's just the story was not at all ever.
Yeah. The, what do you want to call them? The dots or constellations that are on the Na'vi bodies, how they just brighten up and glow when the eclipse happens or when the eclipse doesn't happen, or they're underwater or they're not underwater. Like, just those details just make it super beautiful to look at. Like I said, just the story just really suffers because a lot of times you're sitting there and said like, wow, that was awesome. Instead, you're saying, wow, that was Terminator 2, or wow, that was Jaws.
Now, what do you feel about the stakes here? Because the film is basically broken into 3 1-hour acts, like I talked about. Setup, exploration of the reef, and then the rescue of the kids, which results in them losing their son, Nateum. And when that happens, you know, those are stakes for the movie because, you know, you definitely want to have stakes. And in the first movie, they had them because we lost Michelle Rodriguez's character. We lost Sigourney Weaver's character, where we thought we did. She still comes back, but as a different character. Now, do you think it's important to, that they lost one of their kids here to actually show that there is real stakes involved?
Absolutely, especially because they got 4 of them plus 2 adopted. It's
like, they got kids to spare, is what you're saying?
Yeah, it's like, let's pare this down a little bit. We can't be mobile and move around when the sky people show up if we got so many small ones that we have to drag along with us. You know, taking 6 kids to California is a lot more expensive than taking 6 kids to Alabama.
It's true. And it's always cheaper if you got 5 and then 4 and then 3. Depends on how many movies you want to make it, right? You lose a kid a movie, and if you get to 7, then damn it. But
yeah, no, they definitely, one of the kids was, immediately when they introduced the kids in the beginning, I'm like, yep, one of them are dying.
See, I thought Jake was dying. I thought Jake was going to be the sacrificial lamb because it seemed to me, I'll be honest with you, Troy, his whole plan, let's go hide. I'm just sitting there going, you could save so many lives by turning yourself in because you're the only one they seem to want. So be a real man and just give yourself up and save your family. And because you didn't do that, your kid died.
Yeah, well, he did do that. And then, you know, our good buddy Payakin showed up and then messed everything up.
Saved him and also messed everything up. Yeah.
Yeah. So really, it's Loak's fault again, because if Loak wouldn't have befriended Payakin, then Payakin wouldn't have shown up to cause the surrender of Sully, which then would have led to the death of his brother.
Damn it. So many people to blame. So many people to blame. You know who's not to blame? Nateum. That guy didn't do anything. He was just trying to protect his brother. And he's like, God, you got it. Damn it, man. Now I'm going to die because of you, stupid. That's just very sad.
You could literally say Nateum didn't do anything in the movie either.
Yeah, he didn't. Yeah. Sacrificed himself, I guess. I don't like deaths where there's no nobility to it, especially if it's like a hero character. And there was no nobility to it, that one. Really, because he was just kind of fun. He's only there because his brother wouldn't listen to him.
It's true.
So really, his brother's got to wear that. All right, Avatar, The Way of Water. Anything else of note from this movie that you think is worth discussing?
Can we talk about the one major plot point that was completely just forgotten about in this entire movie?
Go.
Which was our good friend, you know, they introduced these new kids, and then you're like, why is Sigourney Weaver still involved in this? And then you realize what's happening, and apparently, somehow, Grace's avatar got pregnant, and they never answered how she got pregnant.
Mm-hmm.
But that's how Kiri comes to be. Kiri is the daughter of Grace's character, and then Kiri has like this like weird extra awesome connection to Awa, to the planet. And you just see her do some interesting magical things. But apparently this is because she has a frontal lobe cortex problem. And because of that, if she like connects with the planet too much, she basically gets seizures. And I'm like, okay, that's cool. But there's got to be something like, it was like in the first movie when Jake finally like gets everybody together and he's able to connect with the planet and he asks the planet like, hey, planet, come help save us. And he gets all the animals to like show up and become the army. Like, that was what you were kind of were expecting, I think, from Kiri's character, because they had already retreaded most of the first movie in the first hour.
Sure.
Like, why not have Kiri have some big connection with the planet, or at least connect with her mother to find some secret sauce or whatever to have the big battle happen? Like, I thought that whole Kiri connection with the planet was just kind of forgotten about in that whole last act.
Well, I mean, you know, in the first movie, when they're trying to save Grace and she's too hurt or whatever, and she becomes one with the Earth, or one with Pandora. You know, you see... What's that?
The assumption is that Awa basically impregnated her.
Essentially. That's the assumption I got from that. Yeah. And that's where Kiri came from. And that very much was a planting of the seed to come, right? That's what's coming in Avatar 3. We're going to get more details on that because you're right. They didn't do much with it, but it's also, they are planning to connect that dot, I think, in the next movie or the next movie after that.
Right. Which is like, well, are you sure you're going to be able to get the next movie? Like, what if this doesn't do so well and you don't recoup the cost? What if someone decides to pull the plug on the project? It's like, I don't know. Like, to me, like, you're banking on expecting the other movies to be there. Mm-hmm. And that was kind of a miss for me.
Yeah. It's almost like when Netflix ends a season on a cliffhanger.
Yeah.
Don't do this to me. Don't do it.
Yeah, because that's exactly what I was assuming. Kiri was alive, and she was so connected to Awa because Awa is her dad.
Essentially. I don't even want to know what happened while they were having their little bonding moment then. Is there a lot of going on in Pandora's box?
Shit. So, I mean, because basically we're saying that Kiri is like the second coming of Christ for Pandora, right? It's Immaculate Conception. She's now like bonded with, you know, Mother Pandora, Mother Awa. So there's got to be something that she's going to do in the next movie that, like, her stakes also have to be that much more amplified, because if she does connect in, and it was the thing at the end of the movie, like, she's the one that basically saves her family through the connection she makes with the underwater plants and animals. And you're like, well, wasn't she not supposed to do that because she's supposed to get a seizure? And why didn't she seize at this? It was like, it was weird. So they better come back to that, because I think that was a huge miss.
Well, I mean, I'm only half joking when I was making the Pandora's box joke, because she could very well be, quote unquote, Pandora's box. She could be, you know, used for good or evil. And I feel like that's going to come into play. They want to use her to harness Pandora's energy.
Yeah. Like, that's like the next thing the sky people come do is capture her, because they could tap directly into the planet.
Right.
Because, you know, having fountain of juice wasn't enough, you know, or having cool ass swords from Obtanium wasn't cool enough. No, now we actually have to, like, you know, be planets ourselves.
Hmm. Interesting stuff.
That's the thing. I don't know where the story's going because of that.
Me either.
What is Quaritch's thing in the next movie? What's Kiri's thing in the next movie? What's Neytiri's thing in the next movie? There just doesn't seem like there's a next movie.
I think this was the setup for the next movie. I really think Kiri's going to be a pivotal point in the next movie. That's what I think was happening. Yeah.
She was too important in what she did in this movie and the connection she had with Mother Awa, that, like, you can't not have Kiri be the focus in the next movie. It's
agreed. So is that what you want to see in Avatar 3, or is there anything else you want to see? You don't want to see sand people, though.
I want the Kiri story in the next movie, because if the Kiri story is not in the next movie, I'm going to feel bamboozled.
Me too. And I'm with you. I don't want sand people.
The randomness of the Fountain of Youth Juice, like, that was just kind of like random. If we're trying to leave Earth to come here, then why are we doing such a hard job to harvest this stuff? Because you need people to be able to survive the space journey from Earth to here, because cryo's not working anymore. Like, I don't understand the con. Like, there's this, like, something that just didn't make sense.
That's another one of those pieces that feel like it was dropped for future films.
Yeah, it had. I mean, that's the only thing you can think of. It's like it was introduced for the future, and you're just hoping the future comes.
Well, they've already shot Avatar 3, and he's got the script done for Avatar 4, and he's prepared to do Avatar 5, I think, and possibly 6. I don't know, but I don't want another movie which is going to lead to another movie, because at some point, they're probably not going to happen, and you don't want to be left on cliffhangers, man. Nobody likes that.
Hey, sometimes they shoot a whole movie, and they just scrap the whole thing. Batgirl. What?
Sorry. They sure do. All right. Anything left on Pandora before we move on for the year? This is the last episode for the year.
It's gorgeous. I mean, it is visually stunning once again. I just wish the story was better. Which may help me in my bet. So what?
Your bet's not over. All right. We have a bet. Just to recap for people that aren't aware, Troy and I have a bet that his view is that Black Panther, Wakanda Forever, will make more money domestically than Avatar the Way of Water. Now, domestically means, you know, in North America. Now, globally, it's already done like $460 million, this one has. So, but in North America, it's only done, I think it was $135 or something for the weekend, million. But keep in mind, like we were talking about, you got the holidays coming up, you got people that are waiting to go with their families. I still think my bet is pretty secure.
Yeah, and just for people to know, Black Panther did $180 million domestically its opening weekend. So right now, Avatar is behind. But I think the thing to watch is going to be these premium formats.
Mm-hmm.
Which just goes to show that Aaron needed the premium formats to win, where I just needed a basic...
No. Black Panther had premium formats too. I planned. I thought forward. You can't make excuses if you lose. You just lost. I thought everything through, my friend. Everything. I'm sitting at
500 million domestically, so we'll have to see how this goes over the next 2 weeks.
It's going to be Black Panther. I feel pretty confident. Now, the only downside is if it doesn't hold as well as I think it will. That's what I was hedging my bets on. I was going to hold very well through the holidays. If it doesn't do that...
I think it'll hold for Christmas. I think it'll drop for New Year's.
We'll find out pretty soon. Maybe by the time you hear this, you already know who won. And the results are what? If I have to finish Fringe, if I lose, and you have to watch at least the first season of Justified if I win.
Correct.
That's correct. The bet. So either way, no losers here, as far as I'm concerned.
No. Great television all around.
All around. Okay. Well, thanks everybody for listening. Remember, if you want more Hollywood Outsider, we've got two more episodes hitting Patreon. So just sign up and you can get them. Patreon.com/TheHollywoodOutsider. You can always find Troy and I doing The Blacklist Exposed and Beyond Westworld, or we did before they canceled it and removed it.
Completely. Can't see it anymore anywhere. So all you have is the podcast now. So might as well listen to the podcast.
Hey, I bought all of them on physical media. Well, because I haven't bought the fourth season yet, but the other three I have on physical media. So,
and they look glorious in 4K Blu-ray for sure.
Oh, it does. Absolutely stunning. As does Avatar. Go watch the first one again. If you're wondering about, man, I didn't really like it, because I liked it enough. But I was surprised how well the effects hold up in, 4K. And I think you're absolutely right about that. I think watching it on a 4K TV, because the technology has caught up to what you saw in cinema, I really feel like that makes a huge difference rewatching it.
I actually watched it on my iPhone 14 on my bedside last night. And I was like, because I was so close to the screen, it felt like I was actually watching it in 3D.
How do you watch a movie like that on your phone?
Again, people say this all the time. And all you have to remember, like when you buy a television, the goal is that you measure the distance from where you sit to watch the TV to the TV. And whatever that distance is, you cut it in half. And that's the size of the TV you need for the room. So if you're sitting 2 inches from your phone, that 2-inch phone is no different than an 80-inch TV because of the viewing distance.
I mean, I guess that's true, but I feel the difference. Feel it in my bones.
Once you're locked in, and now that the dynamic island is there and it disappears and you actually do get a full screen on the iPhone, and then you just put in your spatial audio with your AirPods, it's like being in the movie theater.
Okay. That's an exaggeration. That's an exaggeration.
Just let Aaron feel that sword pierce his heart.
Except maybe you could. The advantage is, I guess it's like a movie theater, but you can pee while you're watching it because.
Exactly right. I don't even have to get off the toilet. I can sit there for the whole 3 hours. Jesus.
What an image. What an image that I never want to think about again. All right. Remember, you can always find more information at thehollywoodoutsider.com. Join our Facebook group, The Hollywood Outsider. We're on Twitter at @BuyPopcorn. And remember, the next time you head to a theater or sit comfortably on your couch, streaming comfortably, buy popcorn, and we'll see you in 2023, or talk to you.
Happy holidays, everybody.
I see what you did there. Da-da-da-da-da-da.